Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this final day of the Republican National Convention, the 4th of September. We are going to be talking about last night's speeches, and we will have two guests with us during the course of this hour. Craig Gilbert is with us, who was in St. Paul. He, of course, the Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. A little bit later, we'll be speaking with a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. And our phone lines have been very crowded as we respond to what's been going on the night before and what you anticipate from tonight's convention. So I'll give you the phone number right off the bat here, which is 800-486-8655 for you to join our conversation. And we go right to Craig Gilbert, who is covering the convention for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Craig, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
Good morning.
Yeah, nice to have you here. I was interested in one of Tom Ashbrook's guests last hour who talked about Sarah Palin, and I have two questions off the bat. Is she going to be a major element in whether the Republican ticket wins or loses? And I wonder which side of the equation you think we fall on here. And is it good for the party, do you think, that she has become this major, major element?
Well, everybody has described it as a high-risk, high-reward pick, and I think that's true. She's certainly at the center of the convention, and I think that what McCain did in making this choice was he just, placed a lot on his pick. It didn't have to be, if you think about Obama's pick of Joe Biden, it was a safe pick. Nobody thought it really was going to make the difference between winning and losing. It certainly didn't do any harm. It shored him up a little bit in an area where people thought he was lacking in terms of experience. But McCain's pick, I think, was really meant to really shake up the race. And in that sense, it was obviously a gamble because she's so new to national politics. So I think it's a big deal. I think it's the way the campaign they seem to be preparing right now. If you listen to the themes last night, drawing the lines very much along kind of cultural attitudinal issues, kind of a familiar framework for these campaigns running against Democratic elites, quote unquote. That didn't have to be the way this campaign evolved. It didn't have to be the campaign he chose to run. She obviously in his mind fits into his kind of maverick reform theme. So those are all things that were reinforced by this pick. He could have picked a different pick, and he could have run a different campaign in the fall.
Right. You write that the original theme for today's Republican National Convention was peace, not strength or security, but peace. Is it not the theme today?
Well, what happened. There was a little confusion because of the Hurricane Gustav, and they pushed. There was a theme for each day, and I think the theme for the first day was service to things beyond self, or something like that. And then I guess you could say the final day was sort of, it started out as peace, and then it also became the service theme, and I guess it's both now. But the point there was that they, some people in the McCain campaign think it's important for McCain to stress that theme so that people aren't scared by his tough talk. And it's a different kind of year than 2004. And you want to be tough. You want to, show your chops in terms of being a potential commander-in-chief. But in this year, when people are kind of war-weary, you also don't want people to think you're bellicose and trigger-happy.
And there has been a lot of mention of the war, that we are winning by the war, by Sarah Palin and others during the course of the Republican National Convention so far. How does that play with what you write about the public and what you just said, being fatigued by the Iraq War?
I think it's a little bit of a double-edged sword. I think that it's certainly a card they're trying to play against Barack Obama, inexperienced, untested, will he keep you safe? Big theme, certainly, in Rudy Giuliani's speech. At the same time, like I said, it's a very different election than 2004. People don't necessarily make the connection between the Iraq War and the War on Terrorism as they did in 2004. They want us to play well with others and don't think we have. And certainly John McCain has been, I think, more the term of art in diplomatic circles is multilateral in his rhetoric than George Bush was earlier in his presidency. But he's also a guy that Democrats have accused of being reckless and belligerent in his rhetoric, and I think it's important that he not be seen that way by voters.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of anti-Washington elite, anti-press, particularly East Coast statements mm-hmm. last night. I was interested in Roger Simon's column today from Politico, and I want your response to this. On behalf of the media, he writes, I would like to say we are sorry. We've asked pathetic questions like, who is Sarah Palin? What is her record? Where does she stand on the issues? And is she qualified to be a heartbeat away from the presidency? And the other questions that the press has been asking. Why this attack on the press last night?
I think it's a way to rally the rank and file. It's a way to push back on the way on kind of the questions and the scrutiny on Sarah Palin. I don't think either the scrutiny or the reaction to the scrutiny is really a surprise. I mean, we've kind of been there before, and it's a good rallying cry for the rank and file, for conservatives who see the press as being biased and you know, it's sort of running against the media, it's part of running against the media, running against Hollywood, running against Washington, Eastern elites, the whole package. It's kind of it sort of gets back to a way to frame the race along cultural lines, and Sarah Palin plays into that partly because of her personality and her background. And it's not necessarily who John McCain is, because we don't think of John McCain as being that kind of candidate. And I'm not sure, you know, how much what it does for you beyond rallying the base in this kind of election year. I mean, that's one of the mysteries and questions about the speech last night is, you know, we know that it electrified the people in the hall. We know that it did things for the Republican base. We don't know, and I'm not saying it one way or the other. We don't know what it did for swing voters and undecided voters.
Mm-hmm. When will we know that, Craig?
I think it'll take a little time. I think, you know, you'll probably see instant polls and focus groups and things like that and anecdotal evidence in the coming days. But, you know, it's going to be a moving target, because she certainly accomplished, you know, job one last night, which is to, A, not fall on her face, mm-hmm. and B, just pull it off. And she pulled it off. And she, you know, the speech was well written in the sense that it was the kind of speech she seemed comfortable giving. It was full of a lot of zingers, obviously. And again, it depends on how people react to that. But it played really well in the hall, I can tell you. And I'm sure it played well with Republicans and conservatives. I think it'll take some time because it's also going to be a moving target, because she's going to be under continued scrutiny. And
yes.
Also, you know, how does she perform? How does she do in the interviews? How does she do in the debate?
Right. And she is going to have to face that kind of scrutiny. I think it's only natural, probably for a number of Republicans as well, who didn't know very much about her, and the press needed to find out about her. Nobody knew very much. You can't learn about somebody in 2 days or from a speech.
Yeah, the other thing that's going on here is I'm sure there have been fair questions asked about her and unfair questions asked about her. But the problem with the whole debate about the media is that you know, who is the media and who's asking the questions? And so we saw this a lot in the Democratic primary. I mean, you've got, you know, everybody and their brother is a talking head on cable, and people can say anything. Your surrogates can say anything. Your supporters can say anything. Everything and anything is said on the Internet. So part of what people are angry about and responding to are things that you know, the Obama campaign hasn't necessarily said, but liberal bloggers have said, or somebody on MSNBC said, and that's just, I think that's just, we're just going to have to sort of live with that dynamic where there's going to be unpredictable storylines coming out of that process and unpredictable reactions and backlashes to those storylines.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about this? And a lot was said about George Bush in this regard as well, that he's the kind of guy you want to have a beer with, et cetera. From my observation and listening to people who are wildly in favor of Sarah Palin, this phrase, a breath of fresh air, this gutsy person, this, you know, hockey mom who's a pit bull, she'll probably be called a pit bull now with lipstick, it seems to be appealing to a lot of people. They like this average person taking on the establishment kind of image. Does that serve her well? Does it serve the ticket well, Craig?
Well, it does some things. I mean, it certainly makes it easier for John McCain to run not as a perpetuation of the Bush presidency, because he picked somebody so much of an outsider. As somebody put it the other day, you can't get much further out of the Beltway than Alaska.
Right.
And so it definitely does that for him. But again, it gets back to what people are looking for. And I don't have any doubt that she connects with people, a lot of people. I mean, she's the kind of person that I think in a place like Wisconsin, a lot of people will watch that speech and they say, I know people like that, or maybe I'm like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it gets back to whether they how that mixes in with you know, A, with you know, imagining her as a potential president. And B, you know, there's the other issue, which has been much discussed, is what it does to the argument against Obama. I mean, we saw last night Giuliani skewer Obama on experience.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you think, well, that can be a pretty effective case, an argument. I mean, it's always, you know, it's certainly, and most people have seen it as potentially McCain's most effective case. So what is Sarah Palin do, you know, just leave aside the argument about who has more executive experience and her experience versus the other person's experience, but it does make it a little harder, I think, to use the experience club against Obama when you're picking somebody not for their experience as your running mate. And so that's the other dynamic here.
Craig Gilbert is with us, the first half hour Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, covering the Republican National Convention. He covered the Democratic Convention as well. He joins us by phone from St. Paul. And we go to your phone calls now. 800-486-8655 is the number. Mike from Milwaukee is our first caller. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. I just want to say something first for my comment. I was listening to The View this morning, and Barbara Walters was reading Joel Klein's article and another article. There were a list of things about this Palin's voting record, and one of the things was that she used her veto pen to cut out funding for unwed mothers, funding for housing for unwed mothers. And, of course, Barbara Walters said, well, her daughter doesn't have to worry about the housing situation for her and her baby. But anyway, what I called about is this is an Obama ad. A potential here is regarding the experience that your guest was talking about, the experience topic. And the thing is first off, we have a president who surrounded himself with a lot of aging old Republican men. And he used his abilities to look into somebody's eyes to see their soul. And he also had a Secretary of Defense and now the Secretary of State, I believe, Condoleezza Rice, who's an expert with a lot of experience in Soviet history and diplomacy and so on and so forth. She speaks the Russian language, but she was blindsided by this Georgia situation. And in addition to that, we're running around with our heads cut off, not knowing what to do, and we've got all this experience in that. The other thing is somebody brought a point up to me regarding when the towers were attacked. Here's George Bush. They should play this clip. He's sitting there with like a deer in the headlights, not knowing what to do for how many minutes. This is the kind of experience Republicans bring to the table. I think this country doesn't need that kind of experience. So I'll take your
all right. Thanks, on. Mike, for the call. Craig?
Well, again, I think it gets to some of the things we've been talking about. I mean, that's experience is on the table. What kind of experience? Life experience, Washington experience. I mean, you know, I didn't realize until we're researching an article on these vice presidential picks before the picks were ever made, just how rare it is for someone to pick in either party to pick someone who is not a Washington insider for that job. It almost never ever happens. I mean, you can count on, maybe once or twice in the last 50 or 60 years has someone picked someone who never served in Congress. I mean, if Spiro Agnew was the last time that happened, and if you don't count Sergeant Shriver, who was really a replacement pick for Senator Tom Eagleton, so. It just almost never, ever happens. And that's what's one of the reasons why the Palin pick is so dramatic. And again, you heard the experience debate last night. the Republicans want to make it a debate about executive experience and a debate about life experience. And even though it was, in terms of their, you know, the McCain versus Obama, it was a debate about foreign policy experience. So all those things are happening at once, and voters have to sort that out. And the point I was trying to make before was it's not only about, you know, how the Palin pick affects, you know, what you think about her potential to be a president, but it also affects the McCain arguments against Obama.
Craig Gilbert, our guest. Our number is 800-486-8655. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Craig Gilbert is with us now. At the half hour, we'll switch our guest to a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University who reminds us to remember Dan Quayle and that he was part of a winning ticket. Let's go next to Scott from Sturgeon Bay. Craig, hi, Scott.
Good morning. I've watched both conventions. I've watched them pretty closely, and maybe it's just me, but I do see a bit of a difference in coverage of the conventions. And I try not to, but I see Andrea Mitchell interviewing Giuliani saying, did you have to be that hard on Barack Obama? I don't see those kinds of questions posed to the Democratic speakers. I see Chris Matthews before the Palin speech saying, this is about David versus Goliath, her being David and us, the press, being Goliath, with Tom Brokaw acknowledging it. I find that offensive. I find that blatant hypocrisy, saying we're not biased, but we're Goliath and she's David. I mean, I see a distinct difference between how the coverage of the Democratic convention and the Republican convention, the questions that are asked, the tone, the tenor of all the reporters, the joy and glee and jubilation of reporters at the Democrat convention with Barack Obama, but more of a critical eye at the Republican convention. I see it blatantly on...
Okay, let's get a response. Craig?
Well, again, I think what's difficult about this conversation is, you know, answering for Chris Matthews. I mean, mm-hmm. So there's Chris Matthews on MSNBC, there's Fox, there's this, you know, this, and voters, I mean, viewers are entitled to, you know, take away from that whole mix whatever they want to take away from that in terms of the media, but it's difficult to have a conversation about the media in which we're generalizing about the media when we're talking about Chris Matthews and we're talking about Rush Limbaugh,
right,
and we're talking about the New York Times, and we're talking about the Milwaukee Journal, and we're talking about people that are doing very different things and have a very different sense of what their job is and what their mission is. So I can't speak for Chris Matthews, but again, I haven't even been watching the cable coverage, so I can't challenge what the caller is saying about his perception of the overall coverage. I mean, part of it, I get emails and stuff, and part of it, I think, is, you know, these have been different conventions and different things have happened. I mean, I was getting, you know, early on, I mean, we had a hurricane and we had mm-hmm. A dramatic announcement of a vice presidential pick, and we talked about that. In the Democratic convention, the cable coverage was driving Democrats nuts on Sunday and Monday going into Denver because there was all this hype over the Hillary schism. And it turned out to be, you know, kind of much ado about nothing in the sense that they didn't have any trouble handling that, and it was probably overplayed to begin with, and it was incredibly frustrating to Democratic delegates.
Right.
So I'm not trying to say there's never any bias in the media. I'm just saying it's just a hard discussion to have when we're talking about the media and we're talking about all these disparate elements in the media.
Thanks, Scott, for the call. Jordan is next from Marengo. Hi, Jordan.
Hey, how's it going?
All right, how are you, Jordan?
I'm okay.
Good.
I want to echo some kind of archetypes I've been hearing that I think need to be talked about again. You know, what's going on is the Republicans, they kind of can't run on their core issues. I mean, you know, the public sector is going to be more efficient than government. I mean, look at the medical situation. I need to go to two industries, insurance and the medical industry, just to get something done, you know. And you build a profit margin in. Well, that adds to expenses, too, that way, you know, and limited government versus, you know, corporate self-government, you know, industries can govern themselves. Well, look at the mortgage crisis, you know. Our armies trapped in Iraq, that made us safer somehow, you know. So I think what's going on is, besides appealing to the evangelical vote, they've got Sarah Palin as this kind of populist figure now. You know, we're for the little guy. Look, we're normal guys. And besides just abusing the evangelicals for their own purposes, basically, you know, oh, come with us. We're, you know, we're going to help you. We're moral people. You know, that's not really going to work out so good. Once they get the vote, they're going to drop the evangelicals like a hot rock.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, Craig, that they need to focus more on health care in this country, on the economic situation of the average guy and gal?
They being both candidates? Or
the Republicans.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what John McCain does tonight, because that, you know, there hasn't been, I think it's fair to say that the, you know, again, a truncated convention, so we lost night one, but that the first two nights, we're not, the focus wasn't really on the policy agenda, that's for sure. So part of their argument and part of their message in this campaign is attributes, just like it was in 2004, George Bush running against John Kerry. So that's, again, that's just part of the campaign. I think people do want to see an issue debate. I think there's been an issue debate on the campaign trail. There's been, you know, again, a little bit less of it at this convention. So let's see what John McCain has to say about his policy agenda tonight. Maybe there'll be some of that. I don't know how mm-hmm. much.
We'll take one more phone call. I know you have to leave at 10:30. Tim is next from Madison. Hi, Tim.
Hi, good morning. I'm sort of curious about this pick from an economic perspective. It doesn't seem to me like the economy of Alaska is especially well-suited to represent where we need to go as a country. I don't know the exact figures, but I assume that most of what they make economically there is extracted. It's either timber or oil or fish or
gas,
mining stuff. And I just don't see that connecting with where we need to go as a, you know, technology-driven country and trying to compete in a global economy.
Okay, Craig?
Well, I think it's fair to say Alaska is a unique state.
Yes, it is. Right. Thank you so much, Craig, for being with us. Have fun tonight.
Okay, my pleasure.
Okay, thanks. Craig Gilbert, our guest in St. Paul, and he is covering the Republican National Convention this week for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, where he is Washington Bureau Chief, and we thank him for being a fairly regular guest with us. We're going to continue our conversation here on the Ideas Network. We just changed guests, and whatever comments you had for Craig will be applicable for our next guest as well. So just stay right where you are. We'll be with you in a moment. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655 for you to join our conversation. And our guest this half hour is Professor Julian Zelizar. He is Professor of History and Public Affairs at Princeton University. And he reminds us in some recent columns, he does a lot of writing for the Washington Independent, that we need to remember Dan Quayle. Dan Quayle, as we look at the Republican convention this year, and perhaps some similarities here, that Quayle made some mistakes, but he was energizing to the base of the Republican Party that Democrats used as their part of their campaign back in that election. That was Dukakis, and Benson. One of their favorite sayings was Quayle was just a heartbeat away, but they went on to win that election, and we need to be reminded of that. So we will talk about what strategy the Republicans should use in their general campaign and what strategy the Democrats should lose. He does say that, and there's been a lot of comparison here, memories of the running mate of Vice President George Herbert Walker Bush in 1988. And he writes one day that one Republican at the Democratic National Convention in Denver last week, surprised by the pick, predicted that Democrats will have a field day, typecasting her as Quayle in a pantsuit. although I don't think I've seen her in a pantsuit. But we will talk about this issue and welcome your phone calls. 800-486-8655 is our number, as it always is. And Professor Zelizer is a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University's Woodrow Wilson School. He is the co-editor of Rightward Bound, Making America Conservative in the 1970s. And he's completing a book right now on the history of national security politics since World War II. Professor Zelizer, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. There have been a lot of comparisons to Dan Quayle. I wonder if she changed the whole focus of conversation with her speech last night.
Yeah, I think she did a bit. I mean, I think it was a pretty strong speech, just technically and in terms of its reception. So I think she's countered a little bit of the comparison to Dan Quayle that was negative, meaning, you know, he was someone who could not handle himself in front of the public or handle this kind of political position. But the comparison is still there, and I think there's still a lot of Democrats who are saying, you know, she is another Dan Quayle in terms of someone who isn't fit for the job.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think the Democrats are going to do with her pick? It seems to me as though they're in a kind of a tricky position here. You have to be careful about how you take her on. She was very appealing to a number of people in her speech last night. She did what she had to do. She was a good speaker. It was a good speech. What do you do with that if you're running against that ticket?
Yeah, she's a tough running mate, and I think last night that became clear. I mean, mm-hmm. The first few days has been focused on all sorts of issues, from scandals to her ties to certain right-wing organizations, and that has some effect, but I'm not sure Democrats are going to get that far with it. I mean, one of the things that Democrats have to do is not focus on her. I mean, I think there's almost a bait that Republicans put out there to focus the campaign on her rather than on George Bush, the current situation in the war or the economy, and make this about Barack Obama versus John McCain. Now, the more they engage in her, you know, the less of a focus the Democrats have on what's more of a winning issue, I think. So I think part of their strategy has to be not to make her the story. But they've done a good job of the opposite in the last few days. And now America's watching her instead of Barack Obama.
What about America's watching her instead of John McCain?
Yeah, that is true, but I still think that will benefit the Republicans. And John McCain is pretty good at the press, so he can shift those cameras back to him as well. You know, a second issue, I think the one issue where I think she is it still remains vulnerable are ties to kind of far-right organizations. And I think that's something I bet Democrats are going to pick up. You know, mm-hmm. Democrats have had success with Republicans by tying them to extremist groups. And I don't know how she's going to deal with that, but I suspect that will continue to be part of the story.
Right. You also remind us, and this is going back a little bit, remind us of the history here. Eisenhower being prepared to drop Richard Nixon, but Nixon went on to television, made this unforgettable speech, and they wound up victorious as well.
Yeah, there was two examples, and that was the other, where in the middle of the 52 campaign, there are revelations from a newspaper that Nixon, as senator, had retained something of a slush fund of money from California supporters, and the argument was he used it for his own kind of benefit. And Eisenhower is ready to get him off the ticket. He doesn't like Nixon very much, but Nixon kind of makes a televised appeal where he defends the fact he has this money. He says it's perfectly legitimate, many senators do, and he defends his own modest lifestyle. And at the end, he kind of jokingly says he won't return a dog that
right.
he's given to him, Checkers. Yeah. And it becomes known as the Checkers speech. But it's people like the speech a lot, and public opinion turns toward him and is with him rather than against him. And he becomes a major asset in the campaign for Eisenhower, a real kind of aggressive campaigner. So that's a case where a candidate kind of overcomes some bad press and controversy and becomes an enormous plus for the campaign. Whereas with Quayle, he never recovers so much. He's always a joke throughout the campaign. But what happens is Republicans just keep their fire on Michael Dukakis and are more successful defining him than the Democrats are defining the first George Bush. So both are examples where, you know, Democrats should pause a bit before thinking that this candidacy might doom McCain.
And how did they define Dukakis negatively and thus go on to win?
Not very. Some of the rhetoric you heard last night was right out of the 1988 playbook. Oh. Weak on defense, high taxes, kind of out of touch with mainstream social values from Massachusetts, and not, you know, really one of us, quote unquote. And they also talked about him being too liberal on crime. And they run an ad about a furloughed rapist and Willie Horton. And they tie that to Michael Dukakis's governorship. So very kind of traditional Republican themes, which you heard last night. They were kind of sticking to their very successful playbook. And so anyway, I assume that's what they're going to try to do to Barack Obama in the next few months.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, and I don't even know who said this. I've been listening to a lot of television, watching television, listening to a lot of radio. But this was one of the commentators on Point earlier this morning. And I'm interested in your response to this. It's vague enough that you can take it any way you want. She's going to be, Sarah Palin, a major element in whether the Republican ticket wins or loses. She has become a major element. Talk more about that.
She is. I mean, it was one of those star turns in the Republican Party, or in like we saw with Obama in 2004. I think she showed herself, whether you hate her politics or like her politics or whatever, a very poised and powerful speaker. And she has a story to tell in the Republican Party that is something Republicans have been working on. How do you appeal to working class and middle class voters whose economic interests don't necessarily fit what the party's policies are about? And we've heard this kind of debate for months now, or years. Kind of, how do Republicans get these voters? Why don't they vote Democrat? And what she offers is kind of a person out of that cultural, social, economic milieu. And that, combined with her ability to speak and move a crowd, which she did.
Yes, she did.
It points to her not only in this election, but as a future player. And Democrats are struggling with their own issues over kind of the role of women in the party. And here comes a Republican woman who seems very promising all of a sudden and has ties to this right-wing base, which is still very powerful politically. And she's kind of a strange combo in that she appeals to conservatives and is conservative, but doesn't look like what you think, you know, a hard right politician would be. And so she has the ability, like Reagan, to sell conservative themes to a much more mainstream audience. I think that is at least potentially what she might be about.
Let's go to phone calls. Wayne is our first caller for you from Green Bay. Hi, Wayne.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
Good. Just for perspective, I have voted Republican in the last five presidential elections. I listened to Sarah's speech last night very carefully, and I think the Republicans really missed an opportunity. Number one, I had to look carefully to see whether or not she was in fact wearing lipstick. You don't bring out a five-day-old candidate to be the attack dog. You rely upon veterans like Mitt Romney, et cetera, et cetera. Those who have voted with or against Obama. You know, you don't bring some hockey mother from Alaska to be the attack dog. America wanted to hear last night. They didn't hear.
What did they want to hear?
I don't know. You know, I had to leave the room a couple times. I don't know how much education she has. I wanted to hear how health plan would involve her family and what she has done in Alaska to promote a health plan, a state health plan. Heard nothing. College education for kids. Heard nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the issues, foreclosures. What has her state done to relieve foreclosures in Alaska? Heard nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I heard all these smart little snippets against Obama, which, had I designed her speech, I would not have let her go anywhere near. She claimed to have, you know, done a lot for the ethics in Alaska. But what are the particulars? I didn't hear. The only particular I heard is she sold a jet. Now, in Alaska, you have to have a plane to fly around. So I'll bet she's got a fleet of two or three others.
All right, Wayne, thanks. I thought she was on a little shaky ground doing that as well. I didn't think that rang as true as other parts of her speech, which I thought was a very effective speech. But some of the Obama attacks, I might agree with Wayne on that. I don't know if she should have gone that direction. Did you think it was effective, Professor?
My sense was those were written by John McCain's people and the Republican staff. And she had a mix, kind of different parts of the speech, one written for her and one really written by her about her life story and what she stood for. But you know what? At conventions on both parties, you know, heavy detail doesn't work so well. I mean, I think these candidates have learned from themselves. Yeah, I think she's going to have to outline all those issues that the caller just talked about, that Wayne just talked about, in the next few months. I mean, that's going to be a question. Now, what did she actually do in Alaska? Where does she stand on these issues? But, you know, I think politicians attack because it works. And some of those messages will stick. I mean, she was, before her, was Rudy Giuliani in a kind of very biting speech where he's literally laughing at Barack Obama, which only Giuliani can kind of pull off. He just gets rid of all the politeness and formality of this stuff. So I think you're right. I don't think that was the most effective, but I'm not sure it doesn't work. You know, I think Republicans are good at campaigning. And that's one of the things they have done. They put those arguments out there. They get it in the voter's head. And the convention is a time where more people are watching. You know, they haven't been listening, and now they're starting to listen.
Right.
So I think that's what they're at least aiming for.
Yeah. What did you make of her comments concerning Barack Obama? They must have done focus groups or something on this, that while she was mayor of Alaska getting real experience, he's a community organizer, and he's made much of that part of his resume on the south side of Chicago. I'm not sure that worked for her, not, but somebody thought that it was going to. What do you make of that?
Yeah, that was interesting. I mean, and that was a theme some of the others, Giuliani spoke about that too, very dismissively.
Mm-hmm.
I assume kind of a couple things are going on. One is the tactic of turning strength into weakness. So here's part of Barack Obama's story that many find very compelling about what he chose to do after law school and what he's about politically. And yet now, kind of, they're turning that into trying to turn it into a vulnerability. You know, what kind of experience is that?
Mm-hmm.
And highlight what she did as something much grander. Second, I think it kind of is obviously an implicit attack on liberalism. You know, community activism is associated more with the left. And it's part of the ongoing refrain we've heard, attack on liberalism, a more elitist kind of politics, elitist mentality about, you know, what's legitimate and what's not. And I think that was important. And finally, it kind of is ironically using someone with very little experience, her, to attack him on the experience issue and try to draw that contrast out once again. And so I think they're trying on all three. I don't know how effective it will be, to be honest, but they seem very focused on doing that.
Yes, they did.
And it's a key part of his story.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're like Kerry in Vietnam. I mean, they're going after a core part of his biography and trying to just rip it apart.
Professor Julian Zelizer is our guest. He's a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University's Woodrow Wilson School, co-editor of Rightward Bound, Making America Conservative in the 1970s, now working on a book on the history of national security politics since World War II. More phone calls from you in just a moment. Our lines have been very busy. Grab a line right now if you want to get on the air at 800-486-8655. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We return to your phone calls, and let's go to Craig from Onalaska next. Hi, Craig.
Good morning. My comment, I have actually two comments. My first comment is, listening to the convention, Lieberman made the comment that we should vote for the best person, regardless of whether or not they're a Republican or a Democrat. I kind of think the Republican Party is sticking with the R after the name more than anything with this woman. My second comment is that people are saying that the media and also Biden will probably have to go a little soft on this woman when they debate her. I think that's a total mistake because no foreign leader from Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Russia, whatever, North Korea, is going to go soft if she ascends to the presidency. So I just think that, you know, we should not cut this woman any slack. The media needs to be very diligent in checking her record, making certain that what she's saying is true, and just, you know, go after her like they go after any other man. I voted for Hillary, so I'm not opposed to women running for political office, but I want the best woman, not just a woman.
Mm-hmm. Okay, interesting points. Julian?
Good points. I mean, I think Joe Biden, just strategically, they're right. I mean, if Democrats are kind of easy on her and on what she represents for the party, I think they're going to make a mistake. And, you know, I think at this point they need to let Joe Biden be Joe Biden. He's very biting. He's very aggressive. And there is a danger. There's clearly a danger that he's going to face in a debate with her, the kind of looking too aggressive. But I think at this point, Democrats can't afford to be timid. You know, the contrast in the keynote speeches of Mark Warner at the Democratic Convention and Giuliani were just stunning. And I think, you know, Democrats need to practice the same kind of politics if they're going to go to the White House this fall. So I think the caller is right on the media. You know, the media should be aggressive. It has to investigate everything. But I think there is an argument to be made, regardless of what your party you're from. The media needs to select what it focuses on too. You know, how relevant is the story with the baby, for example, that's been circulating? You know, first was it her baby, and second about the daughter. I think the media loses people when they do that. They need to find what are the issues that matter. For example, what political organizations is she with, or what she do in Alaska, and then that's where we need the media to help us. The other issues, I do think there is a kind of valid criticism. Again, both parties, they tend to sometimes be interested in the wrong things.
Right. You know, when you look at her, though, and the way she presented herself to us last night, one of a lot of people's responses was, she's tough. I mean, people say that about her in Alaska. Her parents say that about her. It seems to me as though she's the kind of person, and it doesn't make any difference if she's male or female, that Biden can take her on. She took on Obama. I don't think you need to be walk around carefully with her.
No, I agree with that. I mean, Biden's only one thing, kind of one problem is he has a tendency to make comments about women that are not always, you know, well thought out. And so I think that's the only place he has to be careful in general, just because of all the stuff that happened with Hillary and then this kind of broader issue. But in general, no, she's tough. I don't think she's calling for any kind of,
right,
you know, timid treatment about her. And frankly, I think, you know, both campaigns owe it to the country to give their best shot at each other.
Right, right.
And so I don't think there's any reason he should do that. I don't think kind of Americans will be turned off to Biden because he's too aggressive with her on the issues at all. I just don't think that's how the voters are making their calculation. They won't agree with him, maybe. That's a different issue. But not for being, you know, going. This is a debate, and she showed herself to be a tough politician.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much, Craig, for your call. Let's go to Fred from Waters Meat. Hi, Fred.
Hi, guys. Very interesting. Just want to make a couple comments. First of all, I think in this election, usually the VP spot isn't thought of, you know, that much in terms of power. But here we've got a McCain who's had cancer 3 or 4 times and is 72, 73 years old. So it's very important there. And on the Obama side, he's already had assassination attempts made on his life already. So the VP is very, very important in this election. Second of all, we're having history made in this election because we have our first black as the presidential nominee. But I haven't heard the pundits mention this yet, but I'm kind of looking ahead for 2012. And if McCain Palin wins, the scenario might be there for Palin against Hillary Clinton.
Wouldn't that be something?
That would be something, and I'm sure Hillary right now is salivating at that chance. So,
were you a Hillary supporter?
No, not really. I was more. I really liked Obama and thought he, did show the promise of change. I certainly would have liked to have seen her on the VP ticket, no matter how much Obama would have had to swallow his pride or whatever. I just think that would have been the most powerful ticket.
Mm-hmm. Julian.
Yeah, I mean, the second part is a fascinating possibility.
Yes, it is.
I'm sure the Clinton people were thinking that as they watched the speech. And there is a historic nature, again, for both parties, African-American, female vice president. It's pretty amazing that we've reached this point. And people seem rather comfortable with it in both parties. Not all, but there is a certain level of comfort that's historic. On the VP, that's an important issue. I mean, it's important for the particularities of each candidate, McCain and his age, and Barack Obama, not just for the assassination attempt that happened, but also just for kind of being a younger, less experienced politician. It matters more who he's with. But also, we've seen the vice president is just more powerful. It's not just Cheney, but Gore. And even before him, George Bush, Walter Mondale. The vice president's a significant office now. It's not simply an add-on as it was for so many decades in American history. And what's phenomenal is that we still don't treat it that way come election time. I mean, we're really interested in the picks and the surprise of who it is, but the tendency has been then after this convention ends to kind of go back to the front runners. And I think, you know, especially after Dick Cheney, voters need to take a serious look at who is second in command, kind of not just his personalities, but what kind of policymakers would they be. We make a mistake when we don't look at that anymore.
Thanks, Fred, very much for the call. Let's go to Jeff from Kenosha next. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, you?
Oh, good. Great show. Hey, I felt like I was watching on an audition for the sequel to Mean Girls at some point last night. And I think the choice of Sarah Palin proves that the Republican candidates pale in comparison to the Democrats, and no pun intended, but yes, pun intended. I think that choice is a far-right choice. She was speaking to not the vast American audience, myself being more of a centrist. She ignored the centrists and played the divide, and her arrows were all launched across the divide over my head at the far left. And it seems as though the GOP is losing its identity. One speaker is pro-choice, the next is far-right. She has a paradox in that she's far-right and plays the evangelicals. Does that mean that she is going to favor a reversal of Roe v. Wade and man is the head of the household and all these biblical beliefs? And I think the party is almost conceding. They're catering to a far-right group and ignoring the center.
Mm-hmm. Julian?
I think the burden of the center is going to fall on John McCain ultimately. I mean, the divisions you see in the Republican Party have been there since the 70s. It's nothing new. And what successful presidential candidates like Reagan were able to do was to kind of bring the factions together and then sell them to a large number of Americans, enough to win election. Sarah Palin was not brought in to court the center. That's just not what happened. They didn't go with a Lieberman kind of pick. And instead, the point was, you know, to mobilize really the right-wing conservative base of the party to get them to match the organization the Democrats have right now, where Republicans aren't even close. And I think she's done that. And then kind of the added appeal is obviously to try to get these blue-collar voters that Barack Obama has so much trouble with. That's not necessarily the center. I'm not sure how you categorize kind of a worker in Pennsylvania. But that's who she's going after. So now we're going to see how John McCain does. He's going to make the appeal to the center. And if he's successful, what you have is the kind of bridge we've seen before in the Republican Party. The factions are there. There's big divisions. But a leader can kind of still make a compelling case to vote for a Republican. If he fails tonight and in his speeches, you're right. The party will seem far right, and you know you'll have a continuation of a problem that Republicans have faced, you know, since the 90s.
And who do you think? I thought the placement of Lieberman was odd. He didn't get a real enthusiastic response from the convention. Who was he playing to, and was he successful in whoever he was playing to?
Well, there is an attempt to he does play, I think, to centrist or moderate voters who have not decided, even moderate Democrats who might not be comfortable with Barack Obama. I think that is part of why you have him there. It's part of crafting an image of John McCain as a bipartisan. Here is his Democratic ally. And finally, you know, it's that strong defense. You know, Lieberman isn't just that he's a Democrat, he's a hawk. And he's been one of the strongest supporters of kind of the Bush administration on the war. And, you know, I think even though Iraq's unpopular, I don't think John McCain is shying away from the aggressive war on terrorism message. And kind of, I think he wants to present an image almost of the old, you know, early Cold War bipartisan moment. And here he can bring that back again. And so I think that's why they're using Joe Lieberman. And, you know, the Republicans are hungry for some Democratic voters. And with Palin, they're going for those blue-collar workers who are, you know, have not really been comfortable with Democrats since Ronald Reagan. It's not just that they're moderates. They're never comfortable in Democratic clothes since the post-60s era. And with Lieberman, I think they are still going for more moderate, hawkish Democrats who are nervous about what Barack Obama is.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for being with us. You're a wonderful guest. Please join us again.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Our guest this hour, this half hour, Professor Julian Zelizer. He has written, he writes for the WashingtonIndependent.com. If you go there, you can read the column that caught our attention. Palin McCain's Dan Quayle. Remember, Quayle was on the winning ticket. He teaches at Princeton University's Woodrow Wilson School and is the co-editor of Rightward Bound, Making America Conservative in the 1970s. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, to John Treader for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. Just a reminder, On Point picking up again tonight at 6 o'clock, and then the Republican National Convention will be carried by National Public Radio this evening after 7. I'll be with you again next Monday, where we will have our All Things Political conversation at 9. Thanks for listening. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.